Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Limitless, your podcast presented from the Academy for Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. Welcome back. If you're our first-time listener, again, my name is Mike. I'm thrilled to have you all back for another exciting episode filled with new insights and new opportunities for learning and growth and bringing us all together. Today, I'm very happy to welcome Dr. Ryland Pearson. Dr. Pearson is a chiropractor. He focuses mostly on a family practice. I believe you're in the Midwest. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Sioux Falls.
Sioux Falls. So once again, we have an episode where we're bringing everyone together. Me from the West, from the East Coast, excuse me, and you from the middle of the country there. So you yourself are an amputee. What was your beginning to your journey to recovery?
Well, it was kind of, I'm an elective amputee. I had an accident in 2014, actually on my 1 year wedding anniversary. Don't suggest getting that for your spouse on the first anniversary, but.
No, I think it's supposed to be paper.
Yeah, it's supposed to be something a lot less. I mean, there's a lot of paper involved at the hospital. Yeah,
that's true.
I fell 40 foot, luckily landed on my feet, kind of a freak accident at work down in Texas, planted myself in the ICU for a couple weeks, died the first night, woke up confused. Nobody really knew what was going on. Nobody was communicating with me. So that kind of started this. It seemed like that was a revolving theme within the healthcare system as far as you're always feeling like you're in the dark. So I had my accident. When I was in the hospital, they tried blaming my wife on my death because they thought she was overdosing me on pain meds. I was a young male, no health issues, and the overdose of pain meds is actually what caused the death the first night. Outside of that, I kind of slipped in and out in the ICU a couple times. A little scary. Multiple surgeries later, I had triple orthodontics on my right foot. My left calcaneus is broken. I had some stress fractures in the hip. Other than that, I felt good, extremely sore, had a lot of back pain. But really, the extent of my injury was localized really to that right foot. Going in and out of surgery, I knew I wouldn't go back to building power lines. My wife was a chiropractic student at the time. I'd never really been to a chiropractor outside of when she was doing her internship through her undergrad. I got adjusted once, didn't think much of it. When I was in a wheelchair, however, I lost about 70 pounds. I was down to about 135. When I got hurt, I was in really good shape. I was about 205 pounds, felt great. I was working 12-hour days, felt unstoppable until I stopped. And right. Yeah, I went into a world of depression, as many new amputees do. I felt lost, disconnected with everybody because everyone was progressing forward and I was stuck in this chair at home. My wife was going to grad school. We're living 10 hours away from my hometown. I knew no one. I was kind of in the dark. In and out of surgery, each fusion, you know, you have that initial period of 3 months non-weight bearing and then 3 months partial to make sure that the fusion's good to go. And then by the time I start recovering muscle-wise, I would fall into another surgery. So the first year, you know, about 15 weeks in, I finally decided to go to the chiropractor. It got me out of the house. That was mainly my excuse to go. It was at the school and it was free. And I honestly didn't realize how bad I had hurt when I was in that chair. I wasn't moving. I was, like I said, I'd lost a lot of weight, wasn't going to the gym. I was just sitting around, felt like I was wasting away. That's kind of the intro of what got me into chiropractic and this whole ordeal of who I'm aiming to help within my practice and my life.
So you were going to the chiropractor originally for your own health issues?
Yes.
To recover.
Yeah, so I started going. It spiked my interest on, one, I didn't even realize I was in pain until I was in pain. My quality of life changed. I started going back to the gym because I didn't hurt. It gave me another reason, which slowly helped pull me out of that hole of depression and everything else that goes with the major injury. Fast forward 2 years, I enroll in chiropractic school. I finished my bachelor's degree fairly quick. I went to Palmer College of Chiropractic in Davenport, Iowa. At the same time of doing all the school, I was in and out of surgery. So life was challenging. We ended up having our first child early on in that process as well. So balancing life with a kid, grad school, major injury.
So you were doing it all at once.
Yes. Life was hectic. It was unbelievably hard. I knew I didn't want to go down that life of surgery after surgery after surgery. And I asked David Watts, the guy that eventually, he did all my surgeries and eventually amputated my leg, what was the end goal? And he said, you know, by the time you're 50, you could possibly have 20, 25 surgeries. At that point, I was like, can we just cut it off? And he kind of laughed. Yeah. He's like, yeah, of course. I asked him why he didn't bring that up. He's like, well, no one really wants to part with a limb. And it was hands down the best decision I had ever made. Nobody else thought it was a good idea. Being at, you know, chiropractic, the holistic healthcare model, everyone thought that they could help me. I'm like, this is beyond help. Anyway, the staff doc that I was under for, you know, treatment, she tried talking me out of it, tried referring me out to different places to help get relief, wasn't achieving anything. She finally got some diagnostic imaging done. We did, you know, we x-rayed, we did ultrasound. Actually, was kind of the definitive factor of everyone understanding. What we thought was fused on x-ray, really it was moving. So I had just a whole lot of bone on bone. I started to develop really bad curvatures in the back because I had about 3/4 inch leg length discrepancy with the loss of joint space in that right foot. I took finals at Palmer, went back home and chopped my leg off and came back to school the next Tuesday. It's really fun when you could elect to chop your leg off and not tell anybody. So I was making up stories of the shark got me, tiger shark in 4 foot of water in Phoenix, Florida. It was great. I had a lot of fun with it. And I learned that humor was really good for coping.
Laughter's the best medicine. I mean,
yeah. So,
I mean, yeah, there's medicine also, but you know, other than that.
Yeah. In becoming an amputee, there's so many problems that I found out with the world. We just have, you know, ADA compliance issues. When I was in a wheelchair, everywhere is not accessible. Sure. You get treated like, you know, you're one of the many, and you just get ran through a funnel of, this is your prosthetic, this is your only option, this is what everybody does. And it wasn't true.
Yeah, there's a lot of technologies, there's a lot of options, there's a lot of possibilities with prosthetics.
Yeah.
So when you don't know what's out there, it's hard to make a good decision. And especially if, like yourself, you're a young guy who's looking to have life in front.
I got my first leg. I had two kids at the time, very young. My son was 6 months old when I got my first leg. My daughter was 2.5. The first day I got my leg, they're like, go slow. I was up for 14 hours. I hurt, but I put my leg on the next day and kind of bared through the pain.
Okay.
I was finally able to move. That pain was, when I had my foot, the reason that I chopped it off, it felt like it was broken all the time. The pain that I had, even the worst of the worst with the prosthetic, didn't even amount anywhere close to that. Yeah, so we started talking around, and as a residual limb shrinks, you go through like a process of very uncomfortable legs. And a lot of prosthetic offices will actually just put like cork or some sort of filler in that first socket. And I was wearing like 30 ply a sock. I wasn't instructed on, you know, a half sock because my knee was being compressed to the point of like skin breakdown. I was getting blisters. My calf was basically a pestle and mortar in the bottom of that socket. I was at the gym. We were doing, you know, overhead carries. I was trying to be that cool amputee that was, you know, trying all these things. I was powerlifting, having a lot of fun, but man, did it hurt. And a friend of mine said, hey, you know, Andrew Ludeman, he was a fellow student at Palmer at the time. He said, I grew up with an amputee. You should give him a call. I dismissed it. 3 months later, he sees me have more problems. And he said, hey, give Luke a call. So this is kind of the foundation of why communication is so important, and finding a community that advocates for you is so important.
Right.
I reached out to this stranger on the phone, talked with him for 2 hours about everything. He had already called David Rotter, who we'll get to in a second. He had called Dave and said, hey, Dave, this guy's going through this problem. He's 2.5 hours away. Can he come to my appointment on Wednesday? I drove to Joliet, Illinois, went to this prosthetic office without asking a question. Dave put me in a check socket, no expectations of anything. He found out I was a vet. He's like, yeah, we'll go through the VA, no problem. It's like, great. I didn't know it was an option. He did it first and then figured it out later. I just thought it was, you know, this guy was trying to sell me on something. I walked out on a piece of plastic with a bruised limb from my weightlifting experience. My limb was bruised. I walked out on a pain-free piece of plastic. And I have never felt a more comfortable fit. It was the first time that I actually felt like I could do this, you know. And Dave's community, he has patients reaching out left and right. I've referred people from Oklahoma, South Dakota, anyone that I talk to that's going through any trouble. I'm like, you need to find either Dave or somebody that can try to do what Dave does. There's a few of them out there, but when I felt like I had found the best, I stopped there.
Sure. Listen, when you find something that works, you go with it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, fast forward a couple of years, I get this. It's a posterior running leg from Phil Auer. They call it the formula. If you don't know about it, please look it up. They took a running leg and basically put a heel on it and lessened the curve. The whole leg, socket and all, with a light shoe was 3 pounds. Life-changing weight. I went from a 4-pound foot swinging at, you know, the far end of the leg. My hip flexors were smoked by the end of the day. I was walking, kind of dragging this leg. If you have any athletic patients, if you feel like your leg is slowing you down, go find a posterior mount leg. I don't even care what brand, whatever the case, go find one. It's a leg that actually keeps up with you. I can run comfortably, probably 3 to 5 miles in it. It's dynamic. I was running across Red Rocks while fishing. You feel like you get your life back. But yeah, the most important part about that, you know, about that whole ordeal with Dave is he had this community. When I walked in, a traditional prosthetic office, you get, you know, drugged to the back of the room. You don't meet any other amputees. You don't really understand a community. You go to Dave's office, and the reason it was so special, yeah, he provided great care, but the resources, if he didn't know, you know, he put you in contact with somebody that did, whether it was a coping, and that kind of developed into this, you know, you should be self-advocating. There's a very select group of amputees that I know that self-advocate, and every single one of them have one thing in common, and it's, you know, they're happier, they're more active, they're doing all the things that any able-bodied person would be able to do, and they're doing it with a little bit of fashion, so.
Even better.
Yeah.
Little pizzazz. Did they give you, when you were in the hospital having your amputation done, was there any sort of education that they gave you for finding resources in the community or for finding those peer mentors? Or was it more just, we're doing the surgery and we're looking to get you home? What was your experience?
I hear multiple stories on that. My experience was I decided I was chopping my leg off and nobody told me anything. We just scheduled the surgery. I made a joke about keeping the foot so I could mount it. And that was it. That was my introduction. I went in for a standard. I walked in and woke up in a hospital bed. So I was in the dark. I had met a prosthetist. I reached out about 2 weeks before the surgery. He was an amputee, thinking, hey, this guy's gonna know what I'm going through. It was a clouded misconception. He was great at what he did, but what he did just didn't match what I needed.
Okay.
And I think that's a very important aspect of any care, whether it's, you know, chiropractic, physical therapy, a dentist. If they don't want to match what you do, find a new one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do it in physical therapy, or if you don't, you should be, which part of that initial evaluation is asking what the patient's goals are. You know, what's their idea behind going through the course of therapy or treatment, and reassessing that over the course of someone being on program, because goals change. And, you know, as a physician, you know, we can write all the goals in the world, but if it doesn't match what the patient wants, then there's no buy-in.
Absolutely.
And then they're just, you know, going through the paces. They're not going to be in it for the long haul. And chiropractic, like physical therapy, it's not, generally speaking, it's not you discharge and that's the end of the problem. A lot of times there's maintenance that has to go along with it after discharge from program. So there has to be the buy-in behind it.
Yep. And then there's this homework that you're putting on the patient and they have to be able to do it. If they don't have the goal in mind, they're not going to go home and perform anywhere close to what you want them to perform. They might run through them once.
Right.
But realistically, I mean, patients, I've had them flat out tell me, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'll just come back and see you. Like, that's fine, but this will make you heal faster.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Oh, it's fine. Once my benefits renovate, you know, once they come back again, I'll see you then.
Yes.
Like, that's not the point here. Yeah.
It's really funny. Patients are, you know, they all want one thing. They all want to be pain-free. But oftentimes, you know, managing that without that goal in mind is you're not going to win that battle. You may help them temporarily, but true health is educating them on how to help themselves. And if they don't want to change their lifestyle, if that's not a part of their goal, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
And I think as every clinician needs to realize, you know, that patient that needs that extra help or that patient that's going to do what they say.
Right.
Obviously, you see it in the results too. But
yeah. And then there's also that balancing act between the patient's goals and the caregiver or the family goals, because they don't always match up.
Yes.
And there's definitely dynamics there. I mean, I've had patients' families, you know, come to me and be like, listen, you need to tell, you know, Rylan, you got to tell him to get his ass out of bed and move it. And I'm going, yeah, it's 2022. We don't do that anymore.
Rylan just wants to figure out how to get up and brush his teeth right now. Let's tackle one thing at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I have a patient right now. The only goal she has is to get onto that commode and stop using a bedpan. She doesn't care about anything you just said right now.
It's amazing when you, even if a patient is not motivated, if you have a small goal, whether it's getting up from a seated position pain-free, if it's a functional movement pattern that's not there, if it's some sort of facet issue, if you can teach them how to tackle that one goal, it feels like the whole world opens up and then they're more receptive to, hey, how did we get in this position? You know, we look at the diet, their exercise, movement, and they really, those are the patients that, you know, they become, I don't want to say lifelong patients because I do very different care plans at my office, but they're the ones that whenever they have an issue in the future, they come back to me.
Right. Well, then at that point, there's a trust factor between the patient and how they feel about the care that we provide. And that's a really hard thing. You know, we find it all the time where patients, they don't do very well in the first week or so of care because they've met, you know, 300 and something total strangers through the course of their hospital stay and their rehab stay. And now you're just another person that they're hopefully going to trust to not drop them off the side of the bed or to do something that's going to hurt during the course of their program. But once they get over that hurdle of trusting us, they really can become, in that sense, a lifelong patient.
Yes. Funny that you say, you know, the next person that's not going to drop me. The night I coded, I wake up really, they transfer me to the ICU, get everything under control. The very next morning, I had a physical therapist come in. She was supposed to meet me in, you know, the general area, found out I was transferred to the ICU, still came down. And she's like, we're going to walk to the elevator. Like, at this point in time, all I knew that I had two broken feet. Like, I am not walking anywhere until somebody tells me what's going on. And it was just that lack of communication that, you know, it wasn't her fault. She was just following out what she was supposed to do. She wasn't really instructed on my case either. She did her job or tried to, and I was very angry at the time. Yeah, I went 6 hours with no pain meds, and I had my right foot was basically a coffee cup thrown against a wall. My calcaneus was non-existent at this point. So she comes in and she wants to have me walk. And there's just that, when you have, like you said, I had five teams of doctors, you know, there's almost 50 people caring for me at that time, minimum. Mm-hmm. And that one person that came in made me so hesitant just because I was like, is everyone talking? What is, you know, what's the communication aspect behind this? Why are you telling me to walk when I don't even have a diagnosis of what's going on with me yet? So there's a huge trust factor.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm just curious because it's something that we, you know, definitely try to drive home when we get students that come through. But were you still finding the impression that your medical team was talking about you as opposed to talking to you or to your caregivers?
Yes. So luckily this institution, it's no longer. The hospital sold. They had a multitude of issues that led up to that selling. And I experienced that firsthand. It was a dysfunctional hospital setting. If people are looking and they're wondering, you know, is this the right profession for me? Go see different systems. Go find out what you feel like is, you know, proper patient care and what you want it to be. And then really focus on how they're talking to their patients. I was just a body in the hospital. The only person that knew my name was one ICU nurse that was by far the highlight of my day. She was the only one that I felt like she cared about me as a person when I was in there. And she was the only one that gave me any light of hope. But everyone else just talked to me like, you know, patient this, patient that. And it was the most unmotivating thing I'd ever experienced.
And that's such a shame, because as a patient, you're at the most vulnerable point right there. And the one thing you need is support and some level of understanding.
Yep. It was a learning experience for me. I remember those experiences as I was going to school, trying to discover who I wanted to be, how I wanted to practice. I remembered those negative experiences, and I didn't want to be that person. You can learn a story, or you can learn something from even the worst situation. You just don't make that situation happen in your office.
And I think, you know, good, bad, or otherwise, this experience definitely helped shape you as far as how you wanted to approach chiropractic.
Yeah. And honestly, working with a team, I know there's a lot of, it's kind of a strife between PTs and chiropractors. And it's kind of how Dan and I met. I was helping him close a door at a chamber function in Sioux Falls. I said, and who said chiropractors and PTs can't work together? It's kind of a running joke. It seems like we're always at each other's throat. But really, what you guys thoroughly enjoy doing takes up a lot of my time, and I like to adjust.
Right.
I like to adjust, instruct, and collaborate with other professionals to really focus on that patient's goals. It's hard to find a good fit because it always hasn't been a cohesive tandem duo, I guess you could call it, whatever.
No, definitely. I mean, I've been out, you know, 20 years now from the time I graduated, and there were definitely times where, you know, it was like, why would you go to a chiropractor? You only go to a physical therapist for that. And the reality is, it does need to be a team approach. We just come at it from different perspectives,
yeah,
from different angles. And when you do look at it as a holistic approach and a team approach, at the end of the day, the only one who's going to truly win is the patient.
Absolutely. You nailed it, sir.
It's always a struggle. You know, we all have our productivity measures that we have to hit, or we have to, you know, see X number of patients today, or patients, this one's early, this one's late, this one has to change because something came up. But at the end of the day, it is about the patient, and it is about their long-term goals and their journey, their recovery.
Yeah. I couldn't view myself working for anyone else because I would feel the restriction of not being able to cater to my patients. I'm very flexible with my scheduling. You know, first hot day of the summer, I had 90% of my schedule just, they wanted to go out and they just canceled, you know. It was a letdown. I'm, you know, building a practice. Every single one of those patients, you know, they come back, but they're more appreciative. They gave me proper notice. They were very open with me. Other offices, I feel like, would put a, you know, a restraint. It would almost put a sour taste in somebody's mouth when they're focused on the numbers and not the patient. And on the other side of that, the first rainy day of the summer, I had an abundance of patients. The weather didn't decide my patient volume. It was just, it'd been, I don't know if you've looked at the wind in South Dakota, but it felt like we had a record year. So the first nice day of the year when I didn't have to go golf in 70-mile-an-hour wind, I enjoyed it as well. So look at the bright side.
Absolutely. Well, so I run a support group at my facility for patients that have had amputation. And, you know, corporate folks like, all right, so how many people did you have at the meeting last month? And I'm like, two. Like, what do you mean two? I'm like, well, I have two patients in the house at the moment. They both came. Well, where was everybody else? It's July. They went out.
Yeah. If you look at it from your perspective, you're like, I have two patients and I had 100% attendance.
That's right. And for the patients that didn't come, like, well, where did they go? Well, this one put his boat in the water, and this one, like you, went golfing, and this one, you know, had his son's or grandson's little league game to go to. They had a better offer. And at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to train them to do, right? We're trying to get people to get back into their daily routines, to get back to what they really love doing. And when they're out playing golf or on their boat, they're not necessarily just focusing on the amputation.
Yeah. And honestly, the push for adaptive sports right now is incredibly motivating. One is an amputee, and two is, you know, a healthcare professional that sees the value in movement. If there's not a better time to get out and do things, look around at the opportunity at hand. I mean, you have hockey, there's volleyball, there's basketball, there's the US Open just had their inaugural adaptive golf. You look at Tiger Woods, as soon as I heard about his accident, I'm like, that's me in a nutshell. You know, that extensive damage to that lower leg. If you look back, I think Tiger Woods walking by the sand trap as he's doing his warm up and he kind of slipped. Everyone's like, oh, he's in pain. People don't realize that you know, that was like my experience when I decided to amputate my foot. It's a daily occurrence. He paid special attention to that adaptive open. You know, there's that thought in his mind of eventually, what's the outcome? I'm almost positive they brought it up at one point in time of a limb loss. And with the technology that's come out in the last 10 years alone, I'm like, he would be better. And it's hard to try to say, you know, this generational one, like once in a lifetime athlete is better losing his leg is kind of like, it's amazing. I mean, any support group out there, if they don't see the opportunity at hand and, you know, they can relate to anyone as even up to Tiger Woods, you know, and there's no better time to be living with limb difference, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Mm. Not saying everyone go out and chop off your leg or an arm or whatever the case, but.
Well, I think one of the advantages that we have in this day and age, to your point, is getting a chance to hopefully educate people and educate families and patients to the pros and cons of whether it's going through the process of the multiple orthopedic surgeries versus an elective amputation, like in your case, where you can say these are truly the pros and cons of each surgical path. And this is the technology that's available to you afterwards to be able to make that educated decision.
Yes. If they could go one step further and bring in a previous patient or have some sort of video with technology today, you know, there's have a video of that patient's testimony, you know, let that speak for their work. And if they weigh one out versus the other, an honest opinion goes a long way. It starts that community aspect that I talked about earlier.
And I think also when it's possible, I mean, obviously we're talking about, you know, where people can, you know, truly make a decision about their amputation. And sometimes we understand that's not always the case. It's a spur of the moment decision that has to get made. But when you have this opportunity to go through this process of educating and conversations, but in those scenarios, being able to bring in a peer mentor, to bring in someone that has been down that road to add that perspective. Because otherwise, you know, if it's me talking to that patient and talking to that family, yes, I'm giving the education and I can provide that education and that support, but I can't truly tell them you're going to be fine if you do this other surgery because I've never had either one.
Yeah.
So I think being able to bring in that community aspect when possible and that peer mentor aspect when possible is a huge advantage. And that's definitely where, and I don't know how much experience you've had with the Amputee Coalition, but that's definitely an avenue for people to investigate and look into, because I have a number of peer mentors that I use locally with my patients, but I don't always have that specific peer mentor to come in and talk to a patient and have them understand. Because when you have a 35-year-old patient with young kids, bringing them the 85-year-old peer mentor, there's still a disconnect.
Yeah, that was my experience with the Amputee Coalition. That was my first place that I was in the dark and I was sitting there with one leg like, what's out there for me? What do I actually need to know? It's a little late to change my mind. And I didn't have that. And I found like I was surrounded by people that had lost their legs due to loss of control of their life versus a trauma. And I most definitely related with the trauma. And I couldn't get paired up with anybody that could relate. I don't know if it's too big of a project or if it was the geographical area that I was limited to.
I think that's a piece of it sometimes, you know, like I said, you know, it's hard, you know, if I've got, and I've had some young amputees and, you know, to find somebody that fits that mold where they can have that conversation that they need to have, there just aren't that many in the pool to pull from.
If there's anyone listening in the Chicago area, I'm not sure where the name of the hospital that Dave was at, but he was the chief prosthetist there for 27 years. He's a big speaker at AOPA. From what I understand is a lot of people reach out to him for professional help, prosthetist to prosthetist. He went out on his private practice because he was feeling limitations. He wanted to help people in any way that he could, whether that's, you know, getting Phil Auer to donate some free running legs to start Chicago Blade Runners, you know, doing first and figuring out later. I don't know how many times he's been burned or if he has, but that kind of healthcare with him pushing the limits and him advocating to your insurance company and trying to break down those limitations to allow you to actually get out and experience life and surround yourself with the community. The first day in his office, I met Melissa Stockwell. I had no idea. I looked up, saw her on a poster, and she was sitting there. I'm like, wow. She was actually just showing pictures when she's at George W. Bush's house for his Texas get together. And then Haley Danz, another gold medalist triathlete, she was sitting there. And I'm like, do you bike? Put my foot in my mouth. She's on a poster behind me that I couldn't see. Really funny. But that's, you know, when you reach out to Dave, that's his office. You go in and you meet all these people. It was the most life-changing experience I think I had ever had. You get to take part and to actually see how the leg is created. And he does such a good job educating you on what it is to be an amputee, how to advocate for yourself, which is the most important thing. I'm finding now I'm at the VA system here. There's limitations. It's not my prosthetist. He actually shadowed Dave when he was going to school. He wants to do those things, but the hospital setting won't let him. So if anyone's around Dave, please go shadow. Go see if you can stop by.
How have you found your interactions with patients? Do they know right away that you're an amputee? Do you kind of keep that in your back pocket for when the conversation is necessary? And does that change your interactions with them?
So I actually wear shorts like 360 days of the year. The only other 5 days that I wear pants is just to make the joke when somebody comes up and they're like, hey, I never see you with pants on. And again, humor. So if I ever need a little pick-me-up, it's a great opportunity for an inappropriate joke outside in the community. I own the one-legged chiropractor. We have a pediatric office, and the reason I truly wear shorts all the time, it's not for the jokes. We have a pediatric occupational therapist who deals with some cognitive delays and some behavioral issues. Her patients have no filter. I view myself, if their first experience is with me and I'm laughable, I make it not awkward. They're not going to say anything that offends me. I've had kids tell me, you're weird. I'm like, yeah, I am. Like, it's awesome, isn't it? Come check out this leg. And I'll take it off and show them. The second time they see me, they never look at my leg. It's old news.
Right.
You know, play that forward. If 8 years down the road, his or her first experience was, the kid that lost his leg to osteosarcoma, and they go up and they're like, man, you're weird. How many years does that play? If I can prevent that happening one time, I would be ecstatic.
So if you can make that one kid, childhood, he's already going through so much, and to take that piece off the table, maybe.
Yeah.
That's definitely a win for.
Yeah. And if for whatever reason that kid ends up, or somebody that they know ends up losing a leg, they don't make them feel isolated. They'll almost defend them as, this is normal. This one time I met somebody, it can change somebody's life someday, and that's all I'm really hoping for.
Yep. And that's really what we should all be in this profession and in this field for, is to change someone's life, make someone's life better, and to really make them all feel good about themselves. Because as you go through this journey and this recovery, then that's what you're looking for.
Absolutely.
Is to have that meaningful life.
So one thing that Dan and I had talked about, relating how like chiropractors and PTs can work together, where do you feel like there's a good overlap for opportunity to, help somebody with limb difference specifically?
I think at the end of the day, it's twofold. I think one is definitely that patient goal or family goal, and making sure that we're all on the same page with that goal. Because it goes to what we were talking about before, about having that patient and the caregiver buy-in for what we're doing. And if we're all working towards those goals, then the rest will kind of take care of itself.
Yes.
I know from a physical therapy standpoint, we're looking for function. I think that's the other piece of it, right?
Absolutely.
Is, getting that patient as independent as possible so they can do the most for themselves, doing what they want. So, I've got patients now and, she's like, I don't go out much anymore, especially with the last couple of years and all the craziness with COVID. She goes, I just want to be able to get around my house without my daughter chasing me around with the wheelchair thinking I'm going to fall. And as long as we are all working towards that piece of it, then I think we all work together very well.
Absolutely. I mean, you're looking at the motor patterns, balance.
Yep.
As far as like what I can chime in on that chiropractically, you know, we're looking at dorsal columns and improvements with that communication. You're missing an entire portion of that feedback loop. Chiropractic, you can look at the research on nerve function. There's nothing out there as far as research going with chiropractic and amputations. From my personal experience, some days I feel like I'm stepping in a hole and it throws off everything. It's an SI joint issue where, you know, I get adjusted. I feel great. I work on unilateral muscle training when I'm hopping around a lot to help balance out. And I think part of that, like there's a huge overlap in how we can help patients where, mm-hmm. you know, if I was able to work with Dan, he's kind of in a very select environment with oncology. But if I were to find somebody that could understand, you know, sometimes it's, you're looking at half of the person versus the whole. You want to make sure that everything's moving, not just a dysfunctional motor pattern. There's joint motion. If there's any way, which I think that joint motion is almost our biggest difference. I mean, I'm not sure your practice and how you look at an amputee. I always start with, you know, how is the body moving? Leg length difference with the fascial planes, looking at muscle contraction, stuff like that.
Yeah, we're definitely looking at that. You know, the other piece of that, though, is the reason for the amputation, you know?
Yeah.
So when we have those patients where it was more, whether from diabetes complications or blood clots causing the vascular issues and gangrene, things like that, it's different than, understandably, our trauma patients, because depending on the trauma depends on what other impairments we may run into that need to be addressed. So if we have somebody where it was all the forces were right on that limb and that was why the limb had to be amputated, it's different than the car accident where they had the amputation, but there was also a head injury or spinal trauma or things like that, and possibly was there nerve damage? Were there other muscles that were affected? So we definitely have to get into that holistic sort of approach and looking at the whole body.
Yep.
And I think as clinicians, we sometimes do all get into that sort of tunnel vision and we put the blinders on and like, oh my God, they've got an amputation. But that's not the whole reason that we can be purposeful and that we can have an effect on the patient.
Absolutely. It's funny, you know, my colleagues know I'm comfortable with this. They're almost afraid and it drives me nuts. It's like, you know, I was able to learn under a staff doc when I was going through school. Her uncle is an amputee, or cousin, I believe, somebody close related. She's actually like yelled at people because they went out and they said, you know, I don't know how to adjust you. I can't do any checks. And she's like, he has a body. Like, you can't forget that just because I'm missing part of my leg doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not an individual on that table. And they almost disassociate your person. And I'm glad. I actually had no idea that there were so many physical therapists out there that, you know, shared this passion of limb difference, that select population achieve their goals, until I met Dan. So I'm excited that there's a larger world out there. And yeah, it's great that you're actually setting something up, a communication channel, and you're bringing on different professions. I think it's a huge step forward.
Yeah. I mean, definitely our goal with this podcast is to basically put out that total body approach. We've had physicians, we've had physiatrists, and we've had nerve specialists, and we've had, you know, physical therapists come on, in addition to the patients that have actually gone through it, you know, and the ones that are living it and the ones that are going through their day-to-day struggles, but still working to come out on top.
Yeah. When you say nerve pain, I actually had that targeted muscle reinnervation, that TMR surgery, about a year and a half after amputation.
Okay.
Changed my life. I don't know if the nerve doc that you were talking to had brought that up or not, but...
Actually, he did. Dr. Agrawal was a few episodes ago, and that's one of the things that, you know, he really specializes in and works towards is that TMR, and he'd gotten in. If I'm wrong, everyone out there, I'm sorry, but I believe it was in Texas, actually, that he was introduced to it. But
okay.
I may have to go back and listen to my own episode.
There you go. Just patch that part in there. I actually, so was it Dr. Domanian? Was he one of the, kind of one of the people
I believe,
that?
I believe he had mentioned him in the, when I was interviewing him. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he's one that looked at like, why is this lower limb not responding like an upper limb? I was able to actually refer a patient, you know, he had a delayed amputation. He flew down to Florida where the guy that amputated my leg was actually going to amputate his. He hadn't heard of TMR. And the awesome part about what Dr. Watts did, 2 weeks before surgery, this patient looked and he said, hey, what's this TMR? What can we do here? And just the fact that he asked that, you know, Dr. Watts, he's like, yeah, let me look into it. Within 2 weeks, he set up an entire team to get the surgery performed. And the results were amazing. Because the results were so good and the pain was so controlled post-surgery, that doctor is going to go out and every patient that loses a limb, he's going to have that surgery just happen during amputation.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing. I mean, that's one patient advocating, changing the way that that doc does that surgery.
Does medicine.
Yeah. It's, if you can find any doc like that to work with, anyone out there listening, if you find somebody that has the ability to keep learning and challenge their current thought process, hold them close.
Absolutely.
It's so the self-advocacy doesn't go just for, you know, amputee patients from professional to professional. If you know something that works and you can sit down and have a coffee and say, hey, you know, I love what you're doing. Have you heard of this? Or introduce it, send an email, send something, and you'll start communicating. And I've actually, you know, had opportunities to sit down with surgeons, and I'm working on setting up a coffee with a surgeon just to help talk about what we do in a different light and, you know, why the new generation of not only chiropractors, PTs, but the ability to listen and keep learning. It's a changing world. And I think it's a really positive outlook for healthcare in general. I get excited talking about it just because I have this burning passion to help others, and it fuels others that have a similar passion to, you know, keep challenging themselves.
Yeah. I've been out, like I said, 20 years, and you still, you know, I look at the new grads that are coming through our facility and I'm like, how'd you do that? Because they didn't teach that when I was in school, you know, and as much as they are able to learn from me and the things I've picked up over, you know, 20 years of practice, but they've got some things that they're learning in school now that weren't even a theory when I was doing it.
Or so, it was the opposite theory, right? Like
that too. Yes.
Research came out and they learned more and then they said, but wait, we can do it better.
Exactly. Yep. So things that were precautions or contraindications way back when, and they're like, no, actually it's fine. Go for it. But I think it also goes to the technology and how things have changed, because as materials have changed that are used for surgeries and what have you, some of those precautions disappeared.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an advantage for us in terms of our ability to practice.
Yeah. And the ones that are utilizing that new technology, I mean, it's not everyone like you'd think, the latest and greatest. You know, again, chiropractic specifically, there's the older generation of docs that they don't want to know active care. They don't trust active care. They don't see the value of that.
Right.
And their patients are happy with, they've gotten the results. But if you challenge that point of view, they look at you and they're like, you know, you're different. Don't do that. You're not doing this. Or I think where that's where some of the overlap with the PTs and chiros kind of juggle. But just me recognizing the value, yes, I want to adjust, but also patient values in mind. Active care plays a huge role in true mobility and overcoming what had caused that fixation in the chiropractic world. So it's not that I'm only doing active care. I show them an exercise and I refer them if they need help to a PT. But because I value that, my colleagues look at it a little bit different. And it's odd. It's not that, you know, I'm not changing my profession. I'm implementing a broader viewpoint on how I can help that patient.
Right.
And I think it's important to not get blinded by what everyone else is saying about another profession. People always get their hopes up, you know, that they can solve all the problems when they can't even come close. So it's, again, what you're doing is amazing. I mean, you're opening different eyes, especially with the students listening that are out there not, you know, they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And having them go shadow other professions could be a huge benefit to their overall knowledge and can make them that much more attractable to anyone hiring.
Absolutely. For those students that are out there, as a physical therapist, they never taught us this in school, but I'll tell you right now, I've toileted patients, I've been in the shower with patients, and it may not necessarily be what I went to school for, but sometimes that's what the job entails, and that's where we go. That's what we do. So,
yeah, it's, and you know, some people might not handle that. It's a slap in the face if that were to happen for the first time. But if you have the confidence and the knowledge to help somebody within your scope of practice, like, do it.
Absolutely.
Don't be afraid to fail. If you fail one time, I guarantee you won't make the same failure another time. Whether it's challenging that patient's goals a little too far, you know, you're going to learn their limitations. And the more you shadow and the more you read and the more you listen to podcasts, the more you go out and do all those things, you're going to learn through other people's failures. And I think the ones that don't fail aren't helping their patients to their fullest potential. And when I say fail, I'm not saying like a malpractice incident. I'm just saying
letting
that patient down that one day. You got to remember, you know, that patient's on a care plan. There's ups and there's downs. And that was probably my hardest lesson actually in the first year of practice was I was so afraid to get judged. And I realized I don't have to be perfect. I have to help this patient in the best way that I know how. And if I don't know exactly what's going to help them, I can learn about it. I can expand my knowledge. I can do all these things, put in the extra hours focusing on a different approach and explaining that to the patient and saying like, hey, I don't know if this is going to be the best thing right now. This might hurt. This might not feel great, but let's try this. If you're okay with this, this is what we could try to achieve. And it sounds like a difficult conversation, but 10 out of 10 times my patients are like, if you think it has a chance of helping me and getting motion, like, let's do it.
Yeah.
And it goes well, but it's it's a vulnerable situation.
Yeah. You definitely sometimes have to push the limits or put yourself out there that you don't know if something's going to work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always. And I'm sure you find it too. You know, what works on, you know, my first patient of the day doesn't always work with my second patient, you know, for whatever the reason may be. But if it did work, it's a win, or we're going to problem solve something else.
Yeah, it can be something as simple as, you know, your approach to how you talk to that patient, and they're, you know, maybe they got defensive when you said one thing, like you're trying to be optimistic, you're trying to help them, and they just got defensive and took it the wrong way, or they were having a bad day. Maybe you're having a bad day and your demeanor changed. There's so many vulnerable aspects of healthcare. I think when people get over that, that's when they really start helping patients.
Definitely.
Sometimes it's hard to even talk in the same room with the patient, and they just laugh and they're like, you need a cup of coffee. It's like, absolutely.
Yes, I do. And I generally do. Yeah. It's never a bad time for a cup of coffee, actually.
I have some questions for you. So in your experience, how has broadening your horizon with these other professions, how has that played a role in how you treat your patients and how you view care plans?
It's definitely opened up our bag of tricks. It's definitely opened up the different treatment techniques that we'll use, because I'm not just trying to get you to walk from point A to point B, right? We're trying to get you to walk so that you can do something, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you need to carry that cup of coffee. Maybe you need to be able to manage the fact that your doorway to the bathroom is only 20 inches wide, but your walker's 24 inches wide. So now we have to problem solve another way of you getting in. One of the things that's really great where I am is I am an inpatient facility, and we do. We have PT, we have OT, we have psychiatry, psychology. Obviously, we have our nurses and our wound care team there as well. But we're all working together at all times, knowing that there's a bigger picture in mind. And we don't have the opportunity really to work in our silos, you know? We're always looking at that bigger picture. And I think that's huge change from what I've seen over the course of, you know, my career.
Yeah. I know it's a difficult question too. It's almost like putting you on the spot, but it's not really. You developed this podcast and you have a subconscious reason behind it. It's fun to see the process that you've gone through with your own personal growth. And and just trying to help other people. As soon as Dan mentioned your podcast, I kind of looked into it. And I'm like, it's new, but his episodes have a lot of content. They're very thought-provoking. It's not just, hey, I'm a PT. These are all these other great PTs. You're challenging every threshold out there. And it's just amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's...
Thank you.
I can't stress that enough. Like, what you're doing is you're pushing the envelope. And I grew up in, you know, learning my profession, it's always pushed the envelope. So I kind of appreciate that about what you're trying to do. If there's anyone that has any doubt in a collaborative method, and if they think they can solve everything, listen to this podcast. Like,
oh, thank you, Rylan. That's so great to hear.
I honestly cannot wait to see where this goes. For me, I'm trying to repay that internal debt that I feel to, you know, having that ability to live. And I found the biggest help is in helping others.
I agree with you. We work in a special sort of profession. We don't stare at a screen all day.
Absolutely.
We don't, you know, just, I don't look at spreadsheets all day, although I feel like I do that a little bit more some days than others. But we actually get to look at someone in the eye. We get to be face to face with people. We get to have an impact. We're invited into their worlds. We're invited into their families. We're allowed to have an impact on them.
Our professions are kind of special in how much time we have to spend with that patient. That's the value of healthcare, that, you know, that trust factor. It's, some people try to say it's a placebo effect. No, trust goes a long way. Like, their research gets you so far, statistics get you so far. Sometimes that patient just responds because the time that you spent trying to help them. It's an amazing world out there.
Absolutely. I do have, I have one more question for you, and I'm sure you've heard this on other podcasts that I've done. So my question for you here is, if you're talking to that, whether individual going through their limb loss, their journey initially, or that clinician who doesn't know what to do, or new grad, or experienced therapist, whatever the case may be, what's that one piece of information you want that individual to know?
The one piece of information that I think everybody needs to absolutely 100% know is, one person can't solve all the problems. And I say that because, not only in myself thinking, you know, how can I be better? Part of that is, you know, as a patient, as an amputee myself, you know, how can I be better? It's surrounding myself with a healthcare team that they're different professionals. They're looking at me from different lights. They have different backgrounds, whether it's their 1,000th amputee patient or their first, or is another healthcare professional looking at that patient and saying, hey, you know, I would love to help you with everything that you have, but, you know, here's this psychologist that understands, here's this PT, here's another surgeon that might be able to help solve this problem. The biggest thing that you can have is a community around you with a focused goal at the end. And then I can't express how much, like, realizing that has helped me, not only personally, but professionally as well.
Excellent. It's so much fun because I've asked that question to everyone that's come on, and every single person has a different answer. We put all of that together, and it's just such great advice. And it's hard to come up with that one piece of advice and that one, you know, gold standard, if you will, after you talk to someone for an hour.
It's absolutely hard. The community aspect for me, it changed my life. I chopped off my leg, you know, and I say that because that's, everyone kind of chuckles when they hear that. I'm sorry if anyone's out there that doesn't like that. I thought I had made the wrong decision because I was surrounded with the wrong team. I almost slipped back into that very depressed state where, you know, the thought of the alternative might have been easier. And the moment I opened my eyes and I saw a different community, it ignited that fire that made me want to learn more, made me want to view every patient with limb loss or not as their own patients with their own goals. And how do I put them through an experience that I'd never had right away? I had to learn it the hard way. How do I prevent that? If there's anything else that I have to add to that, have fun with what you do. From the start of my day seeing patients yesterday until I had left the office, I was at the office for 16 hours. I was back at the office, you know, at 8 o'clock this morning. I'm enjoying it. I'm having fun. Everything about what I do, because I keep that passion in the back of my mind, have fun. That might have been a better answer, right?
We'll give you double credit on this one. This was great. Dr. Pearson, thank you so much. Ryland, thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So for those of you that are out there, I hope that Ryland and I have stimulated you to challenge yourselves, do the best for your patients. Remember that their goals are maybe more important than all the goals that we write as clinicians, and to focus on the patient, focus on what they want to get out of this journey into recovery and regaining their lives. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're all in this for. That's why we got into this field, into the healthcare, into rehabilitation and therapy for our patients. So if you can do that, then you'll win every single day. Again, my name is Mike. I am the host for your podcast, Limitless, put from the Academy for Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. And we will look forward to seeing you all at our next episode.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to Limitless. If you're interested in learning more about the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and at our website, www.amputationrehab.org. I hope you enjoyed this talk today, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and information coming to you soon.